Hey friends, Lob helps developers extend their applications into the physical world with automated direct mail delivered through RESTful APIs. Some notable features are sending postcards, letters, and checks as easily as email. You can use customizable HTML templates, verification to ensure deliverability, and autocomplete address forms. Listeners can receive a $20 account credit at lob.com/special-offers/hanselminutes. That's lob.com/special-offers/hanselminutes, or click on the logo below. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Jan de Dablier. I'm his biggest fan, and I've brought him on the show here to talk about prompts and shells and consoles and the command line and his work on Oh My Posh. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much, Scott.
Yeah. I'm not joking, though. I'm like your street team. We call it the street team. If somebody has like a music album or something that they want to sell, you need people on the street with CDs on the corner, like telling people, like, have you heard this hot new album? So I do that. I run around on the street talking about how to make your command line look cooler. Right.
I have to admit, I notice it whenever you're out on the streets.
Yeah. I'm like an unpaid marketing intern. I should probably run a Twitter account that's just Oh My Posh memes.
True. Yeah, it's just funny that you mentioned it. Sometimes I feel like an unpaid developer for a tool that everybody loves to use.
Yeah. So Oh My Posh is at omyposh.dev. But let's get a little history here. What's wrong with the prompt that we get when we open Bash or we open CMD or we open PowerShell today?
Good question. And in all honesty, no, nothing much if that's what you're looking for. It's historically, I grew up at one point in time in a company with a lot of Unix developers. So everybody was either on Linux or Mac using OMISSH, having really nice terminals and prompts. And I was the only Windows developer at the time. I think that was back in 2012, somewhere around that. Windows Phone was booming. I was a Windows Phone developer and working on Windows. And I was the weird kid in the whole company who always got the remark that, yeah, you can't do what I can do on my Linux machine. You can't have all of this. And you know, I don't like being told what I can and cannot do. So I ventured out there to see, is it possible? Can I actually build something like this? Is Robbie Russell's invention in OMISSH a unique thing or not? And it turned out that, you know, you could actually hook up your own nice little themed prompt in PowerShell. It was possible. Someone actually built a open source tool. I don't remember the name, but it's definitely still, I give a reference to that person in the README of the repository, because that's how it started. And then it just went from there. I started building my own little nice prompt, showed it to everybody in the company. Look what we can do. It actually works. You know? I stop bashing on Windows because we actually have these capabilities. And then It grew from there. So that's also where the name came from in the end, because the inspiration came from OMISSH. Initially, I also published modules with Oh My Posh, etc. But then decided to actually stick to the Unix philosophy. Just do one thing, do it right with one tool. And that's where it basically went from. So in the end, there was a theming engine in PowerShell, and that's how it saw the light of day. Mm-hmm.
For longtime listeners of Hansel Minutes, I had Robbie Russell on my podcast in 2008, 13 years ago, to talk to me about an amazing new source control system called Git. And they had caught the Git religion early and were already spreading the good word. I am actually right now, for those of you who can't see us, I'm wearing an Oh My ZSH shirt that Robbie gave me. We continue to give props to the Godfather. However, I am old, and I was looking in some old Usenet. Usenet was like before Google Groups and before, in the early days. I don't know how old you are, but in 1994, there was comp.os.msdos.4DOS, and 4DOS was an alternative prompt an alternative shell rather, that had its own prompt. And what was cool about FourDOS is it had a thing called the exec function that would let you run a little DOS executable in the middle of your prompt. So your prompt would be set in the environment variable, and then you could go and do it and then run a little thing. And they put clocks in their prompts and they did all kinds of stuff. So it seems like the desire to make your prompt your own is as old as computing, right? Not True. That 1994 is that long ago, but it's like, I want to nest. I want to make a little nest for myself here, and then I'll feel better at the command line. Would you agree?
It's true. I mean, even the command prompt in Windows has those capabilities built in. You have these out-of-the-box pointers that you can use to basically customize your prompt. Other than that, it doesn't really do much. But at least, as you say, it gives you the ability to make that terminal feel at home. And that's the thing. That's actually what we're after. That's also what I aimed to do initially, is can I make this my own? And so I have my own team, and I will keep having it. That's just my little, you know, design, and that's how I feel at home with everything that I need in my context. So yeah, for sure, that's always going to be the case.
So juxtaposing and comparing the difference between OMIZSH, which is a framework that Robbie did for managing your ZSH configuration, that's still shell specific, right? Is that
correct?
Okay.
Yeah.
But OMIPosh and things like Starship aren't shells, correct? OMIPosh is not a shell. It doesn't dictate one shell or the other shell.
True. It's actually, in essence, it's an executable now. So it runs cross-platform, and it can render a string that your shell can interpret, right? So that's basically what it does. So the difference between OMIZSH is that it's built natively inside ZSH. That's also how OMIPosh started initially. Mm. It was pure PowerShell. There was nothing else, which makes it very, very efficient, but not very portable if you like to use different shells, because they all have their advantages and disadvantages. And that's actually where I ended up, like, you know, after 4 years or something, I went back to Mac, still used PowerShell, but also started using ZSH, sometimes Bash. It depends on the use case, which shell that you use. It's a tool like a programming language. So, and that's how I got started looking, okay, can I make this cross-platform in a way? Won't work with PowerShell for sure. And I started looking at Go.
I originally was using OMIPosh as a function, because there's a prompt function that PowerShell will call every time. And then there was a module. And then I think it was OMIPosh version 3 when you switched to an executable. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah. So initially, it shipped as a PowerShell module, because everything was in PowerShell, and it's the easiest way to bring certain functionality in PowerShell to everybody. Just install a module, you're good to go. But for 3, obviously, if you want to go cross-shell, and let's be honest, Windows was also moving cross-shell. There was the WSL at the time, so you had the capability of ZSH and Bash on your system natively. There was also still Hitbash available. A lot of people still use it. So in the end, feeling at home should be the same regardless of where you are. You want to have the same experience, basically. And especially on Windows nowadays, that's even more relevant than any other time, because we actively promote using the right environment for the problem you're trying to solve. So I started looking at Go because it's cross-platform and accessible. You know, it was a battle between Rust or Go, I have to be honest. But Rust has a bit of a steep learning curve, and it's a really, really efficient language, but it's not easy if you want to really find people to collaborate. And given that primarily we worked in the .NET ecosystem, going in a different direction there was already a bit of a stretch. So it had to stay accessible, and that's why I made the choice to do it in Go. Because it's also efficient, it's more accessible, interesting language. So 3 is basically also a PowerShell module, but that's mainly to still support people coming from 2 to 3. That was the idea behind that, so that it still feels native and they can just update, it will work. Okay, they need to tweak some things because it's not the same, you know. We went from PowerShell-driven themes to JSON configuration files or YAML or TOML, you can choose, but you know, we choose JSON out of the box because that's understandable. People notice you don't need to be knowledgeable in PowerShell now with 3 to set up your prompt environment, which is a huge benefit because it lowers, you know, the knowledge that you need to just benefit from all of this. That's a huge advantage. And then you can take one theme or configuration and, you know, make it portable across all of your shells by just having that OMI post executable do the magic for you.
Yeah, being able to do that was what took me. I had kind of all customized in PowerShell and everything was great. And then I ended up, every time I would go into WSL, I'd just feel a little sad because it just wasn't the same. And then I was like, you know, I just need to take the time and set it up. And I was anticipating it being a hassle. And I was anticipating like, oh, I guess I'll go and do all that work again. But because I had that OMIPosh V3 JSON file, everything just showed up. And all I had to do was make sure that my fonts had the glyphs that I wanted and everything was cool.
True. Now, I have to give one little shout out in that area to Starship. It's the biggest competitor that we have, if I can call it competitor, but they have this amazing design on how they initialize their all the shells. You know, they basically ship the logic, the PowerShell, ZSH, Bash, whatever logic, they ship it inside of their executable and then they just launch it. So they evaluate that code and it initializes your whole environment, which is a brilliant way. And we piggybacked a bit on that thanks to users pointing us in that direction, because that was a bit of a struggle initially figuring out, okay, how are we going to make this as easy as possible for everybody without having them, you know, copy paste the full script that we need to maintain and they need to maintain. That's not going to work. So yeah, that really, they made that a difference, that it is such a breeze. It's a one-liner now.
Yeah. And I'm keeping mine in a GitHub gist. And at some point, I'll come up with some bootstrapper, because every time I set up a machine, the first thing I do is I set up OMIPosh and then I bring down that gist. Folks like Steve Lee from the PowerShell team have a startup script that goes and checks to see if he's made a change in the cloud, brings the new changes down, you know, kind of bootstraps his whole developer machine. I think that that's the next big exciting thing, is to how quickly can we get everything perfect with our what they call our dot files.
Yeah, indeed. It's a good remark, because the dot files functionality is something I was still looking at. I mean, in the end, it's just a file, right? So you could add it to that repository, make sure it's on your system where it needs to be, and then just go from there. The challenge that you will still have is that, you know, on Windows, if you use the WSL, you use your PowerShell natively on Windows, the locations might change. So there will be some configuration, but it would be interesting to see if we could facilitate that somehow.
Yeah, I've been talking with some folks like Clint Rutkus on the PowerShell team about, like, the Power Toys team, rather, about what does dot files on Windows look like, if we could come up with a way to make, because we have things like the app data folder, and there's dot folders in there already. So that's an interesting conversation. Here's a bit of a technical deep dive that I think is interesting, because I want to cover this font and glyph issue. The reason is that I just opened up my posh v3.json file. I named it that in Notepad. And I've got power line symbol and leading diamond and trailing diamond and all these things. And they're all just question marks. And I remember that there was a time when I had checked everything into Git, and then I downloaded it and I did it wrong, or I ruined it. I can't remember if I used wget or curl, but I ended up with question marks. Can we talk a little bit about the importance of these glyphs and where Unicode and some of the gotchas are?
It's still one of the biggest problems today. And I don't think it's only, you know, my posh issue. A lot of anyone who wants to set up a custom prompt will have or encounter that problem at one point in time. And especially on Windows, we see, look, you need a font that has all of these characters, because a standard font, the one that ships in Windows Terminal by default, doesn't have it. So Cascadia Code is just a plain font. It doesn't have these extended symbols or glyphs that allow you to create a pretty prompt. It just has text or letters in there and other symbols, but not the ones, the extended ones that we need. So what we've always done ever since the beginning, and I think a lot of different prompt engines do that, is we make use of nerd fonts, which is a whole set of fonts that are patched to also include all of these different symbols, so that you can just reference them and use them whenever you like. And there is a bit of a caveat as well. Like, some people can install it directly, it works out of the box, and others have to go through a bit of an ordeal to set it up, because they need to be enabled system-wide, which, depending on how your Windows machine is managed. It's not always true, but there is a good FAQ on the website that runs you through all of that. But it is important to really benefit from it because you don't have, for example, a Node.js symbol in your font by default. It's not going to be there, but you still want to have that context in a nice way in your prompt. So that's what we leverage. And the default themes that we ship, actually almost all of them require a Nerd font, and they all have the same extended set. So the reference or the actual character for one symbol will be the same cross fonts. We also have, and that's maybe interesting for everybody to know, the .minimal extension on certain themes, and they are compatible with, for example, Cascadia Code NF. Is it NF? Yeah, no. Or PL, the Powerline version of Cascadia Cove, which is now, I think, also shipped with Windows Terminal. So they should all render correctly. But if you see those question marks, that implies you need to either install or set up in your terminal the right font. And that is something OhMyPosh can't do for you. You know, we rely on the settings of your terminal to be able to render everything correctly.
So let's take some of that apart, because there's a lot of information in what you just said. So in order to get those rounded corners and the cool arrows and the triangles and the I've got like a little glyph of a heart in mine and or Visual Studio icon. Unicode does not have a slot or a code page isn't the word in Unicode. I'm going to forget and people are going to tell me what it is, but it doesn't have a code point for this is the Visual Studio icon. Here's the GitHub icon, but the Nerd font folks have used space up in the air and said, this is one that we're all going to agree. That's where Node is. That's where .NET is. That's where whatever is.
Right. So what NerdFont actually did is they combined a lot of different interesting of these icon sets and then created specific fonts for that based on existing fonts. Basically, that's what they do. They look at interesting programming fonts and then extend them in a standard way with all of those sets. So what people also don't know is that you have a font that you like, you can even use the scripts at NerdFont to extend it so that it's in the end the same. So you could, even if it's not there, still create your own font. Although I did it, I think, once initially, because we also ship a font to render previews of the themes. And there we had to really select the right one because it's not as simple to render ANSI characters into images, which is another topic and not even font related.
If you're spending more time battling awkward tools than battling bugs, check out Seek. You can install it anywhere and get instant visibility in how your apps and services are behaving in production. Seek collects structured logs from Serialog, Microsoft Extensions Logging, and other libraries, and presents them in a real-time web interface that's like a log file, but with superpowers. Learn more about Seek at datalust.co/SEQ. That's datalust.co/SEQ. So in your example of Cascadia Code, when that new font came out and the Windows Terminal shipped it, back in 2019, I wrote an article about how to use FontForge to manually in Linux patch the font. You know, you basically combine glyphs and you have a set here and a set here and you combine them and then it lines up the Unicode code points and then you pop out with your own personal custom font. Now, Cascadia Code and the folks at Microsoft are not going to ship a Nerd font complete version of Cascadia Code that includes, I don't know, 5,000 other characters.
Yes.
But they do have the PL, the Powerline one. And Powerline one's just the arrows and the... What's the Powerline version?
The Powerline has the triangles. So if you look at Powerline fonts, Powerline is just a style of font. So it uses these standing triangles to create this arrow-like effect in your prompt, usually with background colors. That's what it does. That's the default one. It's also, I think it comes from the name of a prompt style initially, or one of the teams, especially Nomai SSH, it has it, but there are a lot more Powerline rendering engines. So that's in there. What's not going to be in there, for example, is then the Visual Studio icon that you also mentioned. That's not going to be part of it. And there's been a lot of discussions ongoing because a lot of people would like it to be patched with a Nerd font char set, but it's not going to happen. Unfortunately, it would make my life easier as well if they could.
Yeah. And I think the Powerline concept originally came as a status plugin for Vim and then there was Vim Airline. So everyone who is anywhere, whether they're in Vim all the time or Tmux, they want it to be prettier. They want it to be better.
Yes, that's that whole Unix world I was into, and they were all using that. So the Tmux world and the Vim, mm-hmm. and then they have indeed those lines at the bottom. That's where, I don't know if it originated from there. I wasn't in programming at that time. Mm-hmm. I started out as a watchmaker initially, so I started doing mechanical work and then went into the whole software engineering part. So that history is lost on me.
That's cool, yeah. Because I would like to quit computing and become a watchmaker, which sounds like a much more relaxing job.
It is true. Sometimes I think maybe I should go back, but it's a very comparable in terms of how you approach problems. It's the same thing in software. If you're debugging, you're trying to find the actual problem rather than work around the problem, because you can end up doing that, and watches are the same. Always have to find.
If you take a watch apart and you put it back together, but you don't understand why it works, then you're probably in trouble.
That's but for software, the same thing can happen. So it's very comparable in terms of analytical skills and how you approach problems. Yeah.
Just as an aside for you, and maybe our listeners who may also follow Damian Edwards, he mm-hmm. famously wears two watches, one on each wrist. He's a big fan. He can't decide which watch to wear. He loves mechanical watches, so he wears two.
He wears two mechanical watches or one?
He'll alternate. He'll have like an Apple Watch or a Gear Watch and then a mechanical, because it's like, I paid a lot for this one, but this one tells me my heart rate. So
yeah, I'll probably be on the same page in a couple of years. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I have a whole collection of mechanical watches, but unfortunately this one shows my blood sugar. And actually, speaking of that, one of these days I'm going to go and finally update my blog on how to get my blood sugar into the prompt. So mm-hmm. you can have dynamic information in the prompt, whether it be your Git repo or your current Azure or AWS subscription. I would write that in Go.
Yeah, well, so the default segments, as I call them, and a segment is always a contextual part. So all my push is built a bit like Legos. I always say there's blocks which have a position. So right, left, R prompt, which is mm-hmm. another word for just a prompt that's always on the right at the end. And segments are just parts within a block that have a context, like my Git information, my folder information, my username, etc. Now, if you would want to have the specific information, obviously you could extend it by default and then you write it in Go. It's mm-hmm. very straightforward, to be honest. We even have a guide on the website that explains you as a novice how you could do that. Write a code, create a pull request, will help you get through it. it's a process, but usually it goes rather smooth. Now, there's also other possibilities, because we have one of the segments is also reading environment variables. And what you could do, and in PowerShell, we have that out of the box because we respect our history. So we still support PowerShell the most. You have the ability to override a function, which is always called before we create the prompt. So you could use that function to override or populate specific environment variables. And then there is one segment which allows you to read in the value from that variable and display it, which could be, calling or doing an HTTP request and then populating an environment variable with a value, reading a file. But you can go as crazy as you want. If you can write in PowerShell, it's going to be possible. And then we display that value. So if you were to go for, I want to see my blood sugar level in my prompt, it depends on where is that information, how mm-hmm. would you do it? Is it something to standardize or is it too limited as a use case? Then you can also extend it that way. It's very straightforward to do.
So this is actually an interesting discussion that might be worth us kind of architecting that right now, because we'll mm-hmm. use blood sugar as an example, because it's a REST API that's a straight GET to an API with an API key, and it returns back some JSON. But it could be a REST API into anything, into Notion or into a to-do list. Anything you want in your prompt, you can do. But if I made it so every time I pushed enter, it did an HTTP GET, that would be bad.
Yes. Yeah,
hence
correct.
The environment variable thing. Mm-hmm. But with environment variables, you've got user environment variables and system environment mm-hmm. variables. And sometimes they notice that they change, and you can have different ones based on scope. When we put our blood sugar in about 4 years ago in our prompts, it was actually Nate Rajlik, who's actually a Node mm-hmm. core committer. He had the idea, and we got it working in both Bash and in PowerShell. And what he did is he had a Windows service running in the background, or a cron job, that would update a file on disk. Mm-hmm. And then the prompt would just open the file, and the file, the service would be updating things, and it's on its own, like system wide, and making the blood sugar available on disk, as opposed to the environment variable solution. Yeah. Is that a way I could do this with OhMyPosh?
We don't have that yet out of the box. Like reading files content is not one of the segments that we have, but definitely something that's worthwhile investigating. And what we've been looking into architecturally is how do we speed up certain things? Because sometimes calling a command line or just another executable from OhMyPosh takes time. It's not necessarily an issue from OhMyPosh. It's just, we rely on other tools to get information from. And Git on Windows is notorious for not being that smooth. Looking at other platforms, it's really an issue. Now, what we do have already is the ability to cache information. For example, if you say, look, this, I only need this to be refreshed every 5 minutes, then there's no use case in just fetching information every time your prompt renders. That is available. So you could enable that in a segment as well to say, look, store this safely for me, put a time to live on there. If the time expires, let's say 5 minutes, I go and refresh that value and done. That works. So for any custom segment that's written in Go, you have those capabilities, they are built in. So that's one way to look at it. Another way, and that's something I'm exploring, but technically it's I'm still figuring out how to do that. Like, for example, for Git, but Windows is the only use case, and Git is also the only use case where I would do it. And I'm
because
on
of
the
speed.
Yes, because of speed. And I'm on the tipping point of saying, look, in that use case, why not just use PushGit? Because as we all know, PushGit has been around before OhMyPosh. It's one of the founding fathers of customizing your prompt, or at least supercharging it in PowerShell. Mm-hmm. So I took a lot of inspiration from what Keith and the team did there as well, and benefited from all of that work too. I have to be honest with that. Now, initially, I rewrote everything myself. I looked at, okay, how does PushGit do it? I can't use it anymore, or at least I thought I couldn't use it anymore. So we rewrote the functionality in Go. Similar, but obviously it's not as performant because PushGit has the ability to cache information or preload it. So they already noticed that issue and solved it for you. So what we now also have is we have a PushGit segment that can, it will just call PushGit from PowerShell, get the string value, so how you configured it there, bring it to OhMyPosh, and we will display that based on the colors, etc., that you want. The only caveat is that you need the latest version of PushGit, so make sure it's up to date if you want to use that. But that's a significant speed improvement because we leverage their capabilities rather than we are stuck in calling the CLI and needing to have some background service running in all the time, which is also a challenge to solve in an easy way for end users to use. So that's also something to always be conscious about. The core principle is everybody should just be able to use it. Your background, your knowledge shouldn't matter. It should just work and be as straightforward as possible.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I have a segment in my PushGit that just is type colon git style powerline. I've added a couple of properties with a status stash count and upstream icon, which I understand have some small perf connotations. But for the most part, I didn't have to set anything up. But I'm hearing you say that if I want even more, if I want auto completion and things like that, go
correct.
Back to shout out to Keith Dalby and PushGit folks, because they've solved a lot of speed issues.
Yeah. We actually, the auto completion is one that we support out of the box. So because by default, it's not enabled because PushGit needs to render the status to be able to auto complete, obviously. Otherwise, it doesn't really have the data or the context of your Git repository. So we do that for you. If we notice that PushGit is in your modules, we will actually set that up for you. So you have the auto-completion, etc. We didn't do that initially, or at least I didn't do that. And I actually felt bad about that, so we fixed it right away.
Well, it's nice, because what you're calling out, as we have in this show more than any other show, called out people that came before and all the great work that's being done, it's not a competition, right? It's a co-opetition, where we're cooperating and having fun, and you support PushGit, and they did some great work. You know, I extended Nate's stuff to do the blood sugar, and now I'm going to go and do a segment for myself. It's all about open source, building on the work of others and standing on the shoulders of giants.
True. Yeah, I couldn't have done this without everybody that led the way in some way before me. You know, if there's, what's interesting to know, and maybe in that area as well, that as of this week, we have full and really full support in Windows Command Prompt, which is something that I did not know was possible.
Hang on, what?
Yes. So,
like DOS, but not DOS?
Yes. So
you're lying.
No, I'm not. I'm not. No. If you didn't know, now you have the scoop because it's out there. And actually, this is why I mentioned or why I thought about this, because it's crazy. There is a tool called C-Link or Clink. I don't know how to call it.
Oh yeah, Clink. Yeah, Clink.
Which is readline for your command prompt. It's brilliant. So it's been forked for quite a while already. I think Chris is now maintaining that specific part. And there were some users pointing us in that direction. Look, it's possible with Clink. You can actually set up on my posh. I know Chris created a little readme or snippet on how to do it, but it didn't have the same support as all of the other shells had. So what I did over the past 2 weeks, also together with Chris, is we looked at, okay, what are all the functionalities we have from OMIPosh, and how can we actually get the full set of features and the same experience there, like just a one-line initialization and all of the features, which means transient prompt, tooltips, and all of the write prompt, etc., enabled. And guess what? It's feature complete as of yesterday. We merged it, but we're still waiting for the new version of Clink because Chris actually extended it specifically for OMIPosh to get all of this to work. So talking about collaboration and joining forces and standing on the shoulders of giants, I mean, that's a really great example of how a community comes together out of the blue.
Just that is really cool.
Does these things.
It looks like the original Clink was Martin Richards out of Stockholm, and that was many, many, many years ago. It hasn't been touched in a long time.
Indeed.
And now we've got Chris Antos out of Washington taking the mantle there, and you get that read line experience. You get the Control R reverse lookup and things like that, alias expansion for DOS keys and things like that. And then now you're saying that they can execute OMIPosh to do the writing out of the prompt, thereby overriding our classic set prompt equals $P $G that we've all been looking at for the last 30 years.
Exactly. And, you know, it was my most popular tweet in the past year. So I pushed that out there, said, look, we have this in the command prompt. And people always say, oh, why should we support this? Because nobody uses it anymore. Well, guess what? I think there's still a lot of people using the command prompt for what I sometimes good reasons, I guess. So why not offer them the same experience if we can?
That's pretty cool. Like some people might be like, oh, okay, cool, I'll turn that on. But burdened with the historical context that I have about how complicated things like that are, and you know, the DOS prompt, again, I call it the DOS prompt, but the command prompt, CMD, has a lot of historical baggage along with it. There's attempts to rewrite it and do other, you know, alternative versions like 4DOS and things like that. And Clink is written in Lua, and you're written in Go, and command prompt's written in C, and they all work together. And if I have the right fonts, it's going to be a pretty prompt.
But that's the cool thing. If you have Windows Terminal and that's configured right with the right fonts, it's plug and play, which is crazy. And from an end user perspective, it's super straightforward. It's all in the docs now, so you can follow it along. If you're curious about it, I would try it. It's a silent launch, but I guess not anymore after this airs, right?
No, that's great. Well, this will be the launch. I finally got my first scoop over 800 episodes, and I've never got anything new.
Well,
and now
there
I'm
you
getting
go.
A scoop, so that's very exciting. And then something for you to look into if you're not already familiar with, there's another alternative DOS prompt called Yori, which is a little command replacement. So there's such a rich community of people doing fun things at the command line. And I appreciate being able to chat with you about where OMIPosh fits into that ecosystem.
Well, it's my pleasure to share all of these insights.
It's been
a really crazy ride, to be honest. One of the things that people underestimate when you go or when I set out to create a cross-platform prompt tool, is I underestimated the differences between all of the shells and how they actually work and what they need. And then we're not even talking about how these prompts are rendered and how you should, you know, provide the information or the textual representation of the prompt to actually work. That was, I learned a lot by doing that in the past year and a half, which if I stayed in PowerShell, that would have been really straightforward. But it's really different on ZSH and Bash and PowerShell, which is the easiest one. And but then there are other challenges because not all functionality is out there. But people still expect that everything works, which is their good right, obviously, because they don't know. But getting all of that to work has been a really, really interesting journey.
That's great. Well, we put out on a tweet earlier to, like, you know, put a dollar in your guitar case or buy Jan a coffee. Do you want more contributors? Do you need more coding help? Or what can the community do to help Oh My Posh continue to thrive?
So something that's been going on for the past, I guess, a few months now is that we have a lot of people contributing to the repository, whether that's segments for a specific use case or functionality that we don't have. We now have one person that did something that I was already thinking about quite a while, which is a color palette. That you could, for example, say, this is my red, this is my green, this is my blue, because we have the ability to use base 16 colors like simple green, red, light green, the ones where we know on PowerShell that we actually in Windows grew up with. But they are hard-coded towards the values of your shell today or your terminal, which is not interesting. So what you would like is to maybe reference certain colors that you know you will reuse, but we didn't have that. So we're now, there was one actual contributor and end user that said, I want this, let me try it. He tried it. He went in the same direction as I initially did, which architecturally, you know, it didn't feel right. But he inspired me to look in different directions. We talked about it together. So we have that coming up pretty soon. And that's always super useful. So segment contributions are always interesting because, you know, I start from my own world, my problem statements. They might not necessarily be yours. There's going to be other interesting things to do that I'm completely unaware of, right? So even if, and it doesn't need to be contributions, just sharing the idea or like this could be a good use case is already interesting enough, right? I don't know how long I will be able to keep my momentum going in terms of staying an active maintainer and contributor. I'm nowhere near done today, but I don't know how long that's going to remain the same. So it would be interesting if we could build a good, strong community of contributors and maintainers around Oh My Posh so that we can ensure that it keeps on living either after I'm maybe done with it at one point in time. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in my life, but it would be a shame that this just stops because it actually brings joy to so many people today. And we want to keep doing that, you know. So that's definitely something. In terms of donations, and that's also maybe a little scoop or something to be aware of, what I'm doing now until the end of December, all the donations that go to Oh My Posh or my sponsorship page on GitHub will go straight to Girls Who Code. They've been doing an event in the UK, and they are sponsoring Girl Who Codes. It's Festive Tech. I'm doing a session there on Oh My Posh as well. And I decided to just transfer all of the money to them. So if you want to support, just send it my way and I'll send it their way or support them directly.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
We've been learning all about Oh My Posh. You can check it out at ohmyposh.dev. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.